The CMU Podcast, in association with 7 Digital.
This week, Kanye v. Tidal, AEG v. MSG, and everyone else v. Ed Sheeran. It's the CMU Podcast, looking back at the last week in the music business. I am Andy Malt. With me is Chris Cook. Hello, Chris.
Hello there.
Cook.
Oh.
I haven't finished.
A lot of V's.
Yes.
In the old intro there.
Yes, everyone's really upset at the moment.
You know, in legal circles, when cases are officially called, so it would be Kanye West v. Tidal, they haven't actually gone legal yet, but we'll go into that in a short while. But if they did, it would be Kanye West v. Tidal is how the case would be written, yeah?
Yeah.
Nod, agree with me.
Sure, yeah.
But as a lawyer, you don't say the V. You don't say versus, you say and. Certainly you do in the UK. That would be an American case. I have no idea what the American legal convention is. But in British law, or English law, I don't even know about Scotland. Might be different in Scotland. In English law, they look down on you if you say X, V, Y. It's X and Y. So there's a little bit of legal trivia for you there.
But is it written X, V, Y?
Yes, written with a V. You just don't say it.
Well, doesn't matter. Shut up, lawyers.
I don't know.
All lawyers are idiots.
I don't know what they've got against V.
Me V lawyers. I'm saying the V.
You and lawyers.
Although we haven't gone, I haven't gone legal against any lawyers.
You and lawyers. Oh, in which case, it's still V. But if there was actually a formal case, Andy Malt, the all lawyers, that would be a bold bit of litigation for you to pursue. But it would be Andy Malt and all lawyers, not V. So, you know, I just want to be correct and have everything legally sound on this podcast. Do you want to know what I did last night?
No.
What I did last night, I listened to the CMU podcast.
Really, it's next in my podcast feed. I haven't listened to it yet.
I haven't listened to the CMU podcast in a very long time. And that suggests that you listen to it every week if it's in your feed.
Yeah, I do.
You could say it's just in your feed so you can check that it's working and that technically you do listen to it.
I
every
listen
week.
To it because how else do you get better if you don't go back and consume your own stuff?
You be brilliant.
I mean, some might argue it never has, but you know.
No, the solution to that is you be brilliant from the start and then it's not an issue. I think that's what you
need to do. We were brilliant from the start, but you can always get better.
More brilliant.
Yeah.
So I listened to the CMU podcast last night and all about the BBC's Glastonbury coverage. I listened to that bit.
Yeah.
All about the Google case in the Canadian Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. I have to admit, during the Prince Universal litigation, I did fall asleep. But I think that was because I was very tired and nothing to do with the quality of the podcast.
Sure.
Because I didn't then wake up again until, well, when I got up this morning. So there you go. See me podcast if you're struggling sleeping.
Good tip.
Get it on your iPhone and use it to take you into sleep mode.
Good. Well, shall we just get on with this week's sleep-inducing chat then?
Go on then.
Yeah,
sleep-induce away.
Well, apparently it takes till the middle of the podcast. So, the middle of the podcast will be AEG getting a bit shirty with the Madison Square Garden Company and also Live Nation.
Yeah.
That'll be the sleep-inducing moment.
It's not. That's a great story.
Well, not according to your convention.
Some of those quotes are quite forthright quotes for a company to be putting out.
All right, stay awake for that then. And we'll also be talking about a whole load of Ed Sheeran stuff.
Yeah, you're welcome to fall asleep during that.
But first...
There's a chance I'll fall asleep in the middle of that.
But first, Kanye West v. Tidal. Because, yes, no lawsuits as yet. However, there have been lawyers' letters going back and forth.
It may as yet become Kanye West and Tidal.
Yes, because Kanye West has fallen out with Tidal, which doesn't seem that surprising. But that's the thing that's happened. And it seems to be because Kanye was under the impression... Well, two things. One, that he thought he was going to get a bonus for bringing in lots of new Tidal subscribers with his Life of Pablo album. And also, he reckons he was due some money for some videos made for songs from the album. He reckons he's owed $3 million.
In total.
On top of apparently $20 million he was given for his exclusivity deal if a track on Jay-Z's new album is to be believed.
So yes, Kanye was one of the celebrity shareholders. You'll remember that, don't you? When Jay-Z bought Tidal and decided that he didn't just want to have his music on other people's streaming services, he wanted his own streaming service.
Yeah.
And so he acquired what was originally called Wimp, of course. Perhaps they could rebrand it as Wimp, given it's not doing that well. They presumably got the trademark Wimp as part of the acquisition.
Yes, they could do that. They could say that the tide has turned and we're becoming Wimp again.
And go back to that brand. That could be the secret. And so when Jay-Z bought Tidal, he did that embarrassing press conference with all those celebrity backers, and Madonna was there, and Deadmau5 was there with his silly head thing on. He was there.
Calvin Harris was there. Was Calvin Harris one of the ones on the screen?
I think he was.
Chris Martin was on the screen as well, I think.
Perhaps you're just assuming all the British people were on the screen.
Two people were on screens.
It's true.
Which made the whole thing more embarrassing. But this is old news now.
It is.
We all remember that.
But crucially, Kanye was one of those celebrity ambassadors. And it has to be said, of all of those celebs who were backing the Tidal business, Kanye has delivered the goods.
Yeah.
And I mean, Jay-Z has as well, but it's his business. As has Beyonce, but, you know, by marriage, it's her business.
Yeah.
And I suppose Rihanna has, although obviously she's very much part of the Roc Nation family, part of Jay-Z's business.
Yeah, although Kanye did something interesting in that he didn't just go, I've got an album, it's only available on Tidal, sign up now. He said, I've got an album, it's only available on Tidal, sign up now. And then every week, pretty much, for the next however long, he said, oh, I've changed a load of it, come and sign up and listen. So I think over a period of time, he probably got quite a lot of subscribers for Tidal. He is probably correct in saying that.
And yeah, reinventing what it means to release an album in a streaming age.
Yeah, he developed it on Tidal and then released it on a wider bunch of platforms.
Although the Tidal exclusive on that album was a relatively short period, but I suppose that was the shtick, wasn't it? That, okay, you will be able to get this on other platforms in the not too distant future, but you won't get to experience it evolving day by day and the tracks changing as it goes. So Kanye did, in terms of content, deliver the goods for Tidal, but it seems that they are falling apart now. And as you say, we don't quite know what he thinks the deal was in terms of what this bonus was, because it's $3 million in total.
Yeah.
But you can't think that... How much does it cost to make a music video these days? Do you think Kanye...
Well, it depends on the music video, doesn't it?
Of course, because you could do it for £5 or you could do it for...
It depends whether Kanye charges for his time.
Yes. I'm just thinking, of the $3 million, how much? Could he be spending $1 million per video? Perhaps the bonus was like a £10 book token. Most of this is for the...
just a handshake.
For the videos. But apparently he was under the impression that he was going to get a bonus based on how many new subscribers signed up during the exclusive on that album. And it could be that there was some confusion, because some of the stats that people have seen unofficially suggested that with that exclusive and a number of the other exclusives that Tidal have had, people sign up for the free trial, listen to the record, but then when the free trial ends, they cancel, and then the next time an exclusive album goes on there, they just sign up with a different email address.
Yeah.
Because it's very easy to have multiple email addresses. And so they just keep re-signing up while they get the exclusive, and then they go away again. So therefore, it may well be that a certain and possibly significant portion of the people who did sign up immediately in the wake of that album coming out didn't then become long-term subscribers. So maybe there's some technicalities being employed there. This is all rumour.
Yes.
This is all reports. Neither Tidal nor Kanye have commented, although some of those pesky insider sources have spoken, I think, to TMZ.
Yeah.
And it is they who have said that these letters have been going backwards and forwards between Tidal and Kanye over the terms of the deal, and also whether or not that deal still stands.
Yes, because Kanye West is apparently saying that he now considers the contract void and he will go elsewhere with his exclusivity. I mean, presumably, he can't... Well, The Life of Pablo is available everywhere now anyway, so you can't go and do a new exclusivity deal on that. That would be daft. Although maybe these videos, which apparently he has made, he's just not turning them over because he's not had the money he believes is due.
Yeah, so
you could go elsewhere with those.
Go into that in a little bit more detail. So apparently the way the letters have gone backwards and forwards is that Kanye's lawyer said to Tidal, you were meant to give us some money for these videos, and Tidal wrote back and said, well, we've never seen the videos. And then Kanye's lawyer wrote back and said, well, if you give us the money, we'll send you the videos.
Yes. So there's talk of West doing a new deal with someone, possibly, on something. And Tidal is apparently saying, well, if he tries to do that, we will sue him. And they're saying, well, if you try to sue us, we'll sue you. And that will be a pain in the ass for everyone.
Yeah, so not only could this result in one lawsuit, it could result in two. We could have a little bit of counter-suit action going on there. Of course, all of this coincides with Jay-Z putting out his new album exclusively on Tidal.
Yeah, 444? Don't know how you're supposed to say it.
4:44.
Snoop Dogg tried a couple of pronunciations, but we'll come to that. Yes, he put out his new album. I haven't heard it because it's on Tidal. And I can't be bothered.
One person in my Twitter feed, I can't remember who,
apparently it's very good,
said that they had signed up to Tidal because they were very keen to hear the new Jay-Z album. They didn't comment on the album. They just commented on what a clunky experience Tidal is. So I suspect that that might be another person unsubscribing once the free trial is up. You get it on the free trial. There was something about... There were some terms and conditions about the how you got access to it. And I must admit, I saw people talking about them, but I never actually went to read them. So I don't know whether or not you can just get it on a free trial without giving them any money. Probably should have researched that before I came on this podcast.
Or just not said that.
But too late now.
Oh, well.
I've already said it. But I suppose what's relevant here isn't that Jay-Z's put this album out on Tidal. It's that as these reports about Kanye and Tidal falling out started to do the rounds, at the same time, people were speculating that some of the lyrics in the new Jay-Z material was aimed at Kanye.
Yeah, I think if you go and look at the lyrics of track one on the record, you don't really need to speculate that they're about Kanye, because it's pretty explicit that they are, and it kind of it talks about Kanye West, when he went on tour and did all those lengthy rants, one of his lengthy rants was about Jay-Z. In not these words, but here's my paraphrasing, Jay-Z basically says, I gave you $20 million and you gave me 20 minutes of ranting. That's them falling out.
Those may not be his words, but I think those words are better. I think that's probably, he should re-record that track and use your version.
Maybe he should. Mine's clearer because there's a little bit you do have to kind of read a little bit into it.
Yeah. So, yeah, the people are speculating because just those extra few words that you slotted in there and it's now really clear. So we have an official Kanye Jay-Z beef. That's happening through the medium of rap, but it may also be happening in the courts very soon if this supposed Tidal falling out actually goes properly full on legal. I guess we will see. As I was reporting on this story, I was reminded, is that the right word?
Yes, probably.
You know when he put the album on Tidal? And was a little bit ambiguous at the start as to how long the exclusive was going to be with Tidal. He didn't say, I'm putting it on Tidal now, it'll be on Apple in 3 weeks' time, but hey, I'm going to keep working with the record, so there's a reason to sign up. We know all of that in hindsight. Yeah. At the time, we didn't know that's what was happening. So actually, it arrived on Apple Music, etc., quite a bit quicker than I think we expected.
Yes.
And there was that one fan who sued him.
Yes.
And it was going to be a class action on the basis that he had misled people into signing up for Tidal. And then I think that lawsuit said, although he had signed up to a free trial, so he hadn't actually handed over any money, he'd handed over data.
And that has value.
Data has value, and Jay-Z knew where he lived now because of it. So as
I might come around and say, why didn't you sign up for the full thing?
Yeah, and Kanye's bonus depends on it.
Yeah.
Hey, Kanye fan, you should sign up so we can give Kanye his bonus. Anyway, as I was writing about this, I thought, what happened to that? Because that was a great... I mean, it was a stupid lawsuit.
Yeah.
But it was a great lawsuit.
Those are the best ones.
It was dismissed. I don't know which side dismissed it, but it is no longer going through the motions.
Shame.
So that was a little bit of depressing news there as I was writing this up.
Hey, maybe Jay-Z could sue Snoop Dogg.
Perhaps he could.
Because Snoop Dogg has heard the new Jay-Z album.
Doesn't know what it's called, as you've previously said.
Well, he knows what it's called. He just tried a few ways of pronouncing it. But he did not get it off Tidal because he said that Tidal confused him. He didn't really understand it. So he had to get someone to send him a pirated copy. He'd been on iTunes to look for it, but it wasn't there. So what could he do?
To be fair, unlike the person I mentioned earlier, he wasn't specifically dissing Tidal. From the interview, it seems he still hasn't got his head around the concept of streaming music
yes.
yet.
He's still on downloads.
So anything beyond iTunes, the day they finally get around to shutting down the iTunes store, that'll be it. Snoop Dogg will never hear any new music ever again, except that he will, because he's got some friends who are happy to rip it.
Yes.
And send it over in an MP3 or possibly AAC format that Snoop could digest.
Yes.
And this is in a video where he was reviewing the new Jay-Z album, albeit in quite a brief fashion.
Yes, he said he liked it.
So that's good.
That was it, really.
Not enough to sign up to Tidal. Well, I suppose not enough to learn what streaming means and that Tidal is a streaming service and to go to Tidal's website and to sign up and give his credit card information. But that is quite a lot of steps, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I think maybe Jay-Z's album would be good enough for one of those steps, but certainly not all four.
No.
So Snoop Dogg says it's a good album, so you should go and check it out. Neither of us have listened to it.
Who has time?
We're not title subscribers, but we're too honest to be asking our friends to pirate us a copy and send it over by MP3. So we'll presumably it's on YouTube. Have you checked if it's on YouTube yet? I'm sure it's on YouTube. We can check it there.
Still to come on this week's CME podcast, we've got some news in brief. And we've got news of why Ed Sheeran refuses to face up to his critics. Over-dramatised that, hasn't it? But now, here's something that is dramatic. AEG, one of the world's biggest live companies, let's not forget, has really fallen out with Madison Square Garden Entertainment and Live Nation quite publicly this week.
Yes.
This is a lot of fun.
I mean, there's never been much love lost between the major live music.
No.
Because obviously all the strands of the music industry have their own trade bodies, don't they?
Yes.
And, you know, the major record companies, they're competitors, and I'm sure behind closed doors they slag each other off a lot. But also, through their trade bodies, they collaborate on a lot of stuff. So they collaborate on awards and they collaborate on, like, copyright lobbying and all of that stuff. Whereas it always seems to me, with the big live music companies, the only time they ever really get together is when PRS tries to put the rates up.
Yes.
And that's the one thing that will get all the live music companies around a table to battle PRS on the royalties they have to pay to the Collecting Society for the songs. But generally, they don't necessarily get on very well. And this all relates to a little bit of, arguably dodgy dealing that is, you can have your own opinion on this. Some people are just saying, that's business.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are saying that's a little bit of dodgy dealing. And this all began in the US. It's become a UK story as well.
Yes.
But it began in the US.
Yes. So MSG Entertainment owns, obviously, the Madison Square Garden venue.
Hence, MSG.
In New York. Big venue.
And also a prestigious venue, I suppose. It's a venue that a lot of artists want to play. So within that company, it's sort of their prestigious space.
Hence using its name on everything.
Hence using its name on everything.
But they also own other venues, including the Forum in LA, and reportedly have been adopting a policy of basically prioritising people to play Madison Square Garden if they agree to play the Forum over the Staples Center in LA, which is owned by AEG, hence AEG being a bit annoyed.
Yes. And I suppose the rumour that was doing the rounds was certainly giving preferential treatment to artists who play the Forum at the Madison Square Garden. Some people were saying if you didn't play the Forum and you did play Staples Center, you were banned from playing Madison Square Garden. It was going as far as that. And so, yeah, obviously AEG are a little bit pissed off with that. And as I say, some people might say, that's a little bit dodgy. Some people might say, that sounds a little bit anti-competitive. But I believe that some people...
some people have said that. We'll get to that.
Some people have just said, it's fair business, isn't it? You own multiple venues. You try and persuade artists to play those venues. And, you know, you might leverage one venue over another.
Yes. So AEG is fighting back against this. And they have said, well, anyone who plays the Staples Center in LA will be prioritized to play the O2 Arena in London, thus making this an international thing. So if you want to do a big world tour and play the prestigious venues worldwide, you've got to pick sites.
Because, of course, the O2 Arena, another venue with a long heritage in music, prestigious space. It's funny how the O2, I think, it's a very successful venue. I mean, it keeps coming up the top of the most successful venues in the world list. Usually it's top, if not, it's certainly top three. And I think it has very much become the stop-off in London for sort of global artists on an international tour. I don't know, when you live in London, it is still sort of... the old Millennium Dome. I think what's interesting for me about the O2, I mean, the arena is a perfectly decent arena venue. I mean, I'm not sure there's any such thing as a brilliant arena venue. Arena venues are arena venues, aren't
they? Yes.
But it's a perfectly good arena venue. And the hospitality suites are quite nice. I only ever get to go in those at the Brits, but they are quite nice.
Yeah.
But I always think it's funny, when they first set that up, not as the Millennium Dome, but they set it up as a venue. There was all the talk of there being other stuff in there, wasn't there? We're going to have a museum and a theatre. And most of that has never happened. I think there is a cinema and there might be bowling. Is there a bowling alley?
Might be. There's some restaurants.
They had the British Music Experience and that didn't really work.
No.
And as far as I can see, on the outer rim, most of it still isn't being used. They've tried to launch club venues there, haven't they? That hasn't worked.
Unsuccessfully several times.
So it does sort of feel like it's an arena venue with a food court. But still, a very successful venue. And as I say, I think on the international stage, it is seen as being the stop-off in London. Hence, how AEG can use it as a bargaining tool to say, well, if you play the Forum, you may get to play Madison Square Garden in New York, but you're not playing the O2.
Yes, and so AEG has put out this statement where they say, we think everyone has the right to choose where they play. There shouldn't be any restrictions on which venues you play based on what other ones you play. However, we've been forced into a corner and what can we do? So they said they've exhausted all avenues on this. And so they're going ahead and they're coordinating bookings between the O2 Arena and Staples Center to level the playing field for all, is how they've put it.
It was interesting because apparently we were hearing that memos had gone out to some of the booking agents on this the week before last. And then I wasn't expecting such a forthright open statement from AEG. It was sitting there, well, I think it was on Monday morning when we got in, and it was like, whoa, this is, A, you're being very sort of like, yeah, this is what's happening, this is why it's happening, it's not our fault, but that was just the start of this
statement. Yeah, it got better. So Live Nation came out and said, well, this is anti-competitive. Because Live Nation, obviously, as well as being AEG's big competitor as a promoter, it's also a management company, owns Ticketmaster. That is the biggest live company in the world, which AEG noted in their response to that. I was basically saying it's the height of hypocrisy for Live Nation to accuse anyone of anti-competitive behaviour when it's basically got the whole market sewn up in all avenues.
And then they started citing how in its marketing material, Live Nation talks about the fact that they are the content and the infrastructure and the ticketing platform. And they were saying, you keep telling everybody how you are everything, so how can you turn around to us and accuse us of anti-competitive behaviour?
Not only that, they then started pulling up things that Live Nation had been subject to a parade of antitrust lawsuits, regulatory investigations, and an antitrust consent decree. So can't call us anti-competitive. And said the Live Nation has a well-earned and widespread reputation for resorting to aggressive tactics. So really went all out in their
response. Bearing in mind that this dispute wasn't even with Live Nation.
No.
It was just that Live Nation had criticised AEG. And I suppose, I think there were two things that really annoyed AEG about Live Nation's intervention. Firstly was the fact that they were criticising AEG for linking the O2 in London with the Staples Center in LA. And they were saying, but you didn't say anything about MSG linking the Forum in LA with Madison Square Garden. So that's hypocritical that you didn't criticise those guys and now you're criticising us. But then there's also the Ticketmaster thing, that AEG never liked the fact that Live Nation merged with Ticketmaster back in 2010. And AEG used to use Ticketmaster prior to that. Yeah. Then they became the same company and AEG were like, well, we're not going to use our competitor to sell all of our tickets. And so they started doing deals with other people. They launched their own ticketing platform that has only really taken off in the US called Axis. It does exist elsewhere, including here in the UK, but not anywhere near on the level of Ticketmaster. And so part of their allegation was, yeah, the reason why you were supporting MSG and you weren't moaning about what they were doing, because they, by using Madison Square Garden in New York, were forcing people into the Forum in LA, which is a Ticketmaster venue. Mm. So you are getting all the tickets. So it's not your venue, not your shows, but you are getting the ticketing business. Whereas at the AEG Staples Center, we don't force people into ticketing. The promoters can use whichever ticketing platforms they like, although we would like them to use ours, Axis. So there was a Ticketmaster element to this story as well.
Yeah, and so Live Nation has kept quiet on the MSG deal because it suited their interests and it showed up how well-equipped Live Nation is to punish any buildings that dare go with a competing ticketing provider. They also went on to say that despite threats of legal action from Live Nation, AEG fully intended to go ahead with this new policy and also was highly confident in the legality of it. So go away, please. Live Nation was basically the conclusion of their very long statement on this. I mean, more of the statement was about Live Nation than it was about MSG.
It was. And they very quickly started laying into Ticketmaster. Of course, Irving Azoff is also part of this story, as he so often is in the music industry, because he is in business with MSG. So he is part of that group, and he put his sort of management company and some of his other interests into that business. And of course, Irving Azoff used to be up the top of Live Nation. He was sort of the second boss there for a time. And as far as I'm aware, he was very much saying, this is just business. What are you moaning about? Well, he was saying that about the MSG bit. I don't know what he's been saying about the AEG bit. But an interesting thing going on there. Of course, Songkicks antitrust litigation against Live Nation continues to go slowly and tediously through the motions in the US court. So Song Kik, like AEG in their statement, but actually in court accusing Live Nation of anti-competitive behaviour. Live Nation very much pushing back on that. So that is still going through the motions. But this sort of suggests that Song Kik may have an ally in AEG in that particular debate.
Yes, so we'll see what happens with all that, whether AEG starts backing up Song Kik and whether any of this other dispute goes legal. Time quickly for some news in brief now. Paul McCartney has settled with Sony ATV in their reversion right dispute, which is really disappointing.
It is. That was the US case, testing whether or not British songwriters are able to enforce their reversion right under American copyright law. Of course, the more interesting case on that is happening here in the UK. It's the Duran Duran litigation, also against Sony ATV.
Yes, which Duran Duran lost the first round of that, although they're going to appeal, and we'll see if that's overturned.
Yes, so this debate is not at its end at all, although it does mean that we're unlikely to see Paul McCartney fighting Sony ATV on this. It always seemed unlikely that was going to happen, because actually what Paul McCartney was saying to Sony ATV is, I just want to know whether or not you're planning on fighting me.
Yeah.
And Sony ATV were procrastinating. And so that was it was an interesting sort of aside. But anyway, that's all been settled. Paul McCartney and Sony ATV, they're all friends again. But we will keep an eye on the Duran Duran case here in the UK. And that will be the test on whether or not British songwriters can exercise their reversion right without their publisher interfering. If you've no idea what that means, look it up on the CMU website. Or just wait until the Duran Duran case is in the appeal court. And then we're sure to talk about it on the podcast.
Yeah. The BBC published its first ever annual plan. Well, not, you know, not its annual plan title case. It's had plans before.
Has it?
I think.
Not that I've noticed.
Part of that plan is to have a more distinct Radio 1 and make it more attractive to its... I mean, that's a plan they come up with every year. Let's make Radio 1 more attractive to our core listenership.
But this was interesting because this is because the BBC used to be overseen by an organisation called the BBC Trust. They've now shut the BBC Trust down. They've changed the way things are working. So there's now a board that sort of is hands-on overseeing the BBC. But then Ofcom, the media regulator, is now basically the regulator of all the BBC services. And this new annual plan is part of this. So it's basically a document that they're submitting to Ofcom, saying these are all the things that we're committing to do in the next 12 months. And it covers all of the BBC services, all the TV stations, all the radio stations, online stuff, and talks about lots of things. But the Radio 1 commitment, although, I mean, it was just, we're going to make Radio 1 more distinct than competing services. So it's not necessarily making Radio 1 more distinct than Radio 1, but making it more distinct than all the other pop stations. Well, it already is more distinct than all the other pop stations. So I don't know how big a commitment it is. But it was interesting that at the top of this document, which covers all the BBC services, they picked out two or three specific things as being their top, top priorities. And this was one of them. So it was interesting that Radio 1 was very much at the top of the list of where we're really going to put in some effort this year. So we'll see whether that has any impact.
Yes, we did get an email from a publisher after we reported on this, saying that it's interesting that they want to make a more distinct Radio 1, because in recent years, having cut back their specialist shows, that had really affected that publisher's income, particularly reggae, I think they're working with various kind of less mainstream genres, and due to the rejigging of specialist shows, it meant there was less of that publisher's music being played on there, and therefore they felt a less distinct station already.
And less income because they're getting less royalties off the BBC directly.
Because their music isn't being played.
Or less income because they're not getting the promotion that is then bringing in other revenue. Either or. I think the commitment was more to make daytime distinct. So I don't think we're necessarily going to see a lot more specialist shows. They do commit to a certain number of hours of specialist shows in the annual plan, but I didn't then go and count how many hours of specialist shows there already are and whether or not that's an increase. I don't think it's an increase. But they were talking about daytime being a little bit more distinct, having a few more tracks in there that you wouldn't find on, say, Capital than is currently the case. So we'll see whether or not that has any impact.
And now a little update in the ongoing Fyre Festival debacle. Its co-founder, Billy McFarland, has now been arrested for fraud. So that's going well for him. In fact, it doesn't seem that anything is going well for him anymore.
No.
Because he turned up in court. Bear in mind, this is a man who a lot of money has flowed through his bank accounts in recent years for various things. He's used to living a big flash lifestyle. He was able to bankroll an albeit failed festival in the Bahamas. But he turned up in court with his parents and a public defender because he can't afford a lawyer and he's had to move back in with his parents because he has no money left.
He is officially broke, although the American press were then immediately saying, well, hang on a second, that car you're driving and that house that you're living in. And it was like, well, I'm still contracted to that. I'm trying to get out of them. So yes, obviously, after this disastrous attempt at doing a luxury festival in the Bahamas, all went horribly, horribly wrong in late April. We've reported and talked about all of the many, many lawsuits that have been filed by ticket buyers and by suppliers and by his investors. We also had the reports that the FBI were investigating him. And I think that's where these charges have come from. And yes, this actually sort of links into the civil lawsuits that have been filed by his investors.
Yeah.
So the allegation is that he misrepresented his business, which was both the festival and also this talent booking app thing that the festival was supposedly going to launch. And so the allegation is that he misrepresented the figures of the business in order to get investment in. That is fraud. And I mean, ultimately, I mean, I can't see this would happen. But ultimately, that level of fraud could come with like a 20-year jail term. So it's a very serious crime.
That would be a pretty bad end to this story for him.
And, some of the reports were saying that in court, he's always been quite cocky in the past and quite sort of bullish about everything. Well, I mean, you know, for several weeks after the event, he was still talking about Fyre Festival 2018, yeah, wasn't he? Whereas the reports were saying that in court, he did seem to be much. Well, want to be cynical. You could say that was an act for the judge, but people were saying he did seem much more like, oh my God, I've just realised what a colossal mess this whole thing has become. So yeah, he's on bail and due back in court very soon, actually. By the time this podcast goes out, he may already have been back in court. So I'm sure there'll be more updates on that very soon.
So you can read all of those stories in full on our website. If you go to completemusicupdate.com/podcast, you'll find the show notes for this episode, where all the links will be. And finally this week, Edward Sheeran.
This is the Ed Sheeran miscellaneous slot.
It really
on
is.
On the CMU podcast.
But you know what, last when we were talking about Glastonbury stuff last week, and you asked me what I thought of Ed Sheeran's set, and I said I hadn't watched it.
Yeah, you said you hadn't watched it.
But I will. That's what I committed to. I have.
Well done. All 2 hours?
It wasn't 2 hours. He only played 90 minutes.
90 minutes.
Very shoddy.
He's no Dave Grohl.
He's no Dave Grohl. Or no. Radiohead played 2 hours as well.
Yeah. Really... 2 hours too long, some people said, although you liked the Radiohead set. So.
There was an interesting article on The Quietus about how the experience of watching it at the festival and the experience of watching it on TV were very different. And that's what I wondered about, that someone has done both. And
Talking about the Radiohead set here.
Yes, saying yes. They didn't really enjoy it when they were at the festival, but then they watched it on TV and were like, wow, this is amazing. Why didn't I enjoy it?
That was the entire plot of last week's Beef of the Week.
It was, yes.
So you're saying the Quietus have confirmed your fear arising in the Beef of the Week. It's good of them to do that.
I don't think that's why, but I'm probably not the only person to wonder about that. Anyway.
We're not here to talk about
Radiohead.
We're not
here to talk about that. I've watched Ed Sheeran's show now, and despite it only being 88 minutes long, it's very good. I've not really watched him do that. I mean, I've seen him do like a one-off thing with his loop pedal, but seeing him alone on stage with his loop pedal for an hour and a half, it's quite a thing to do that and play to that many people and pull it off. It's good. And I quite like the fact that I'm a big fan of artists who are one thing on record and then something completely different on stage. It was good. I'm a big fan. I'm sold on Ed Sheeran.
Sold
now.
On Ed Sheeran. I not the records.
No, not his records. God, no. But live, good stuff.
The
well done,
live show. And of course, you know, just him and his guitar and his pedals.
Yeah.
No backing track, remember?
No.
He's looping on those pedals. All artistically interesting.
Mm.
Also, in this era where the music industry is sort of tight on budgets, really good business. It's his show. Playing to that many people is Ed Sheeran, a guitar, pedals, and a sound system. And that's not a very expensive show.
No.
Compared to, a show with, well, either a backing band where you've got to pay all the band, or with, like, you know, high production values, lots of screens and stuff like that. So
yeah, he had three people come on and play some brass and stuff.
Not interested in that.
But only for one song. And they probably could have done 50 quid in a bag of chips.
He probably just went round the Glastonbury campsite and found them. Said, come on stage.
He seemed to know them.
Oh, did he?
He did.
Well, he's a very personable chap.
He did introduce them.
Well, knowing their names doesn't mean...
No, but he talked about how he claimed to have worked with them before.
Right.
I mean, whether that's true or not, who knows?
Probably a lie.
Anyway, I would tweet him and tell him how much I enjoyed his Glastonbury performance.
Or we could tweet him and ask him whether he really knows those people.
Yes.
We could tweet him and say, we think you're lying and you didn't know those people and we think you're a cheapskate. We could tweet him that.
We could, yeah, but it wouldn't matter because both he and I have quit Twitter. So what's the point?
You quit Twitter a long time ago.
I did. I was ahead of the curve on that.
Ed Sheeran's just copying you. Or is he?
Well, he claims not to have quit Twitter, although sort of has. Because although he's still pumping out messages to Twitter, he's not reading any of the replies coming back to him. And if you don't engage with it, you can't just have a megaphone and shout at people. You've got to be in or out on Twitter, I think.
I think when you're Ed Sheeran, you can just shout at people. There are people willing to listen. I don't think there are people willing to just listen to you.
Anyway, so he was interviewed by The Sun, or The Sun, I don't know. They had a quote from him. You never really know, do you? And he said, there's nothing but people saying mean things.
On Twitter.
On Twitter. One comment ruins your day, but that's why I've come off it. The head fuck for me has been trying to work out why people dislike me so much.
Why do people dislike him so much? I think it's because he's a cheapskate and he pretends to know people that he's just found backstage in the toilets to come and play.
He then, after all
trumpet.
That story about him quitting Twitter went around and around the internet.
It did. And also, some people were commenting on the fact that, obviously he was saying, all these sort of, troll is the word we have to use now, isn't it? These bullies on Twitter saying all these nasty things, which if you're a celebrity, it is true. You have people who, for reasons best known to themselves, feel that they have to get on Twitter and say really nasty things. But some people were commenting that it was, assuming this was an interview with The Sun, it wasn't just something they'd picked up randomly from somewhere. If he had actually sat down with The Sun and said this, they were saying, well, the tabloid newspapers are good at bullying celebrities and indeed non-celebrities when they want to. So perhaps that was an interesting place to have a moan about being people saying nasty things about you on the internet.
Anyway, so later in the day, Ed Sheeran clarified this.
He did.
He said, loads of hoo-ha about me quitting stuff. I haven't quit anything. I'm just not reading anything except Harry Potter. But he said that on Instagram, so it didn't really further his argument that he hadn't quit Twitter.
I didn't know Harry Potter was on Twitter. So I must dig him out and follow him. He's obviously saying some really interesting stuff if Ed is still following Harry on Twitter. So yes, he's tweeting out, but even if you say nice things back to him, he ain't going to see it because he's decided just to not read any of the things in his Twitter feed.
It's true. I don't think anything on Twitter is helpful, nice or nasty. So that's why I don't use it. It's a load of rubbish. Don't use it. Everyone stop. The sooner Twitter is shut down, the better. That's what I say.
If he had been reading Twitter this week, I think the other thing he would have noticed is, other than people just sort of sending random, horrible, nasty statements about him and his appearance and his music, you also would have found quite a few people mocking the suggestion that he make an 8 Mile style biopic set in Ipswich. Although I read these quotes, which came from Q, I think, as if he was mocking himself.
Yeah, I think that can be an issue. Well, anything written down can be removed of its context.
I certainly read it as if he was joking, and some people, I think he's being serious, and therefore they were mocking him for that.
I think it is serious that he's interested in making a film. He's talked about that before. He wants to make a film, and I think he is in talks to make a film, and he wants to do that. You know, he wants a new project. And
he does know that he can't make a film on his own.
With a loop pedal.
Just with a loop
looping
pedal.
Looping bits of film.
Yeah, you would still need at least a few camera guys for that.
Well, I mean, he's got someone doing the lights on his live show.
Oh, well, there you go.
He's not completely alone. I assume there's someone mixing the sound as well. So he's used to having a crew. And someone did hand him a new guitar at some point.
Did
he? Broke his strings. So clearly he's used to having a few people around. So he could have someone with a camera, someone with a microphone, him and his video looping pedal. But he has also talked about this film before being an 8 Mile style film, which I don't think I would watch a film that was about how Ed Sheeran came to be, slightly fictionalised, because Eminem doesn't play Eminem in that film, does he? He plays Rabbit.
So. I've never seen 8 Mile, so I don't know.
If you're not, you should watch it. It's quite good.
Probably. I do.
I haven't seen it for a long time.
I think one of my favourite Eminem tracks, it's Lose Yourself that comes from 8 Mile, isn't it? I think it's one of my favourite Eminem tracks. So I've seen the clips in the video a lot, and therefore that track and its accompanying video pretty much tells you the story. So I'm not sure.
Yes, no, that track is an entirely condensed version of the film. You really don't. You don't need to see it.
Well, that's why I don't think I've ever felt the need.
Unless
to,
you want
to
see
it.
Some staged battle rapping.
No.
In which case, don't bother. However, Ed Sheeran's Notting Hill style, 8 Mile style film set in Ipswich. Now that might be something worth seeing.
Talking about Notting Hill, the film there, obviously.
Yes.
So it would be a little bit of Hugh Grant, Julia Roberts, but 8 Mile, Eminem as well. All set in Ipswich.
Yes, he said, he wants to have an 8 Mile moment, but 8 Mile meets Notting Hill, not gritty like Detroit, but just Ipswich. And, you know, and he's talking about he wants to do the soundtrack, or like put together a soundtrack, not necessarily write the entire soundtrack, although it would include some of his songs, because he also said he had loads of songs about Ipswich that have never come out. I'm not sure if that's a bit of it's true. Maybe it is. Maybe he's written a whole Ipswich concept album.
And this is how he's going to justify releasing it.
Yeah.
He could do 8 Mile meets Babe. And he could, that pig, do you remember there was that Ed Sheeran pig sculpture thing that he bought, didn't he? Because it was for charity.
Yeah.
He bought his own pig.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he could make a whole film around the Ed Sheeran pig. I'd watch that.
The benefit of the pig in Babe was that it moved.
Well,
I think an inanimate pig sculpture is not going to make a very engaging film.
Well, could they not do it like sort of like a sort of a Bagpuss type thing? Did Bagpuss ever move? I don't think he did.
Bagpuss moved.
Did he?
Yeah.
Did his eyes move? Well, they could.
I don't think his eyes necessarily moved. Bagpuss, stop motion animation, wasn't it?
Well, could they not do
but
stop motion animation?
But Bagpuss was made out of you know, material. It was easy to move. This pig sculpture, you can't just put it in. You can only kind of just turn it round slightly.
Well, I think that'd be enough.
It's not enough.
I don't think people
would
notice. People don't pay attention to things these days. They're watching on a tiny little screen on their phone. I think that would be fine. But if not, they could animate it, couldn't they? They could take the sculpture design. And they could turn it into a piece of animation.
Well, then you've got
a winning formula here.
I don't think that's going to work.
Ed the Pig.
Well, again, you could tweet him and suggest this, but he won't see it.
No,
what's the point? How do you get in touch with Ed Sheeran these days? Tell him your ideas about pig animation.
On Instagram.
Because you could send him a video of it. This is perfect.
He's clearly still using Instagram, because that's how he told us that he's still using Twitter.
Although he said he's not reading anything, so that would suggest he's not reading replies on Instagram either. So you'd have to get him to follow you on Instagram and then post a video of an animated pig sculpture and put some Eminem music over the top of it.
I've got a solution.
Yeah?
I'll get Harry Potter to tweet about it.
Okay.
And Harry Potter...
Get J.K. Rowling to write a book about it.
...can use his magic to make the
Maybe J.K. Rowling could write the script.
Animate. Yeah, there we go.
Tweet her. She's on Twitter.
She is. She's always
on Twitter. She replies to people all the time.
Always responding to people.
Especially if you insult her.
Exactly. I'll get on there and I'll say, hey, you!
You can tweet, why don't you write a script about an animated pig, you idiot?
Yeah.
And then she'd reply and probably tell Ed Sheeran about it.
Well, I'm going to go and do this.
This is gold.
I've got to leave quite shortly, so Andy's going to have to finish the podcast on his own.
You're late already.
But as I'm leaving, I'm walking to the tube station to get to my Music 4.5 event that's starting very soon, so I've got to get out of here. But I've been walking down Chancery Lane to... it's quite a long lane, Chancery Lane, from the station to Music 4.5. I will construct that tweet, send it to J.K. Rowling. So by the time this podcast goes out... 8 Mile meets Babe, scripted by J.K. Rowling, music by Ed Sheeran, will be in production, I am sure.
Well, good. Well, in that case, that's all sorted. Let's just wrap this up. You can do all the liking, sharing, rating, subscribing stuff that you do with content on the internet. With this podcast, you should do that.
Do you have any comments on the podcast? I think what we've learned from this edition is obviously don't tweet Andy Malt about them.
No.
Or Ed Sheeran, because neither of them will see it.
You can tweet CMU, at CMU. Chris might look at it, although I don't think he ever replies.
No.
Chris is quite bad at manning the CMU Twitter.
I've got other better things to be doing. The manning the CMU Twitter feed, which still says the podcast comes out on a Friday as it currently stands. And as our listeners know, the podcast now comes out on a Monday.
Yes, or you could email us, cmupodcast@unlimitedmedia.co.uk. Just say anything you like. You could send us spam. That's the only email we got this week.
You should have come and read it out.
Well, I'd have to get it out of the trash folder now. But yeah, welcome to do that.
Anyway, script ideas for how 8 Mile versus Babe's going to work. We'll accept those. We'll pass them on to Ed Sheeran via J.K. Rowling.
Anyway, this podcast is presented by Andy Malt and Chris Cook. It's produced by Matt Peaty. And for more on CMU, go to completemusicupdate.com.
Recorded at Unique Facilities, the CMU podcast is an Unlimited production in association with 7 Digital.